I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Getting my dad to say I love you.
To say what?
Say he loves it.
Outrageous.
Bloody nonsense.
All right, Dad, my guest for this episode is none other than the very amazing Zoe Lyons. You know Zoe?
Yes.
How do you know Zoe?
Because I've seen her perform, I think, at Edinburgh at least twice, if not three times.
I love it. She's great. Yeah, I love Zoe. She's like one of my old comedy pals, and she kindly let me support her on tour many years ago. She's just one of the best stand-ups going, isn't she?
She's a leading female comedian. I don't know what you say.
Right. I think you just say comedian now. I
don't. Comedian. Okay. Well,
that's good.
Right. And she lives near us, doesn't she?
She does live near us. Well, why don't I go chat to her, and then I'll ask your question to her near the end. Does that sound good?
Yeah, it sounds wonderful.
Let's get Zoe on. You already know her. You already love her. This is great. Welcome to the podcast, Zoe Lyons. How are you, Zoe?
I'm very well, thank you. It's very lovely to be chatting to you. It's been an age.
It's been so long. I know. It's been ages. So it's weird to, it's odd to do these because I kind of want to just chat about everything to you. But I annoyingly have a specific thing to talk about in
the
podcast.
It's good.
It's good. Like, you've got to have a thing now.
Yeah.
So what I like to do right at the start, rather than all the small talk that I really want to do, but if we go into a tangent later on, I'm not going to stop it. Have both your parents said the phrase "I love you" before to you?
Yes.
Good.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
There's a mini pause to think about it, which is normal. Like,
yes.
Ellis James, for example, was like, I think my dad he just didn't know. Yeah, and so that's why this came about, because I thought my dad would have, but then I don't know if he ever did. So that's why we did the podcast.
I think. I mean, my mum has definitely said it. Definitely said it.
Standard.
I think my dad has sort of prefaced it with, "You know, I love you, don't you?"
Classic.
Yeah. So it's that sort of puts the pressure back on me to know that he already does. If you know what I mean. It's done in that, I don't need to say this, do I? And it's
Your dad is he in that mold of a emotionally uncomfortable, is that the word I want to use? Uncomfortable man?
Yes, my dad is a sort of weird bin bag of emotions. It's very strange. I've still yet to work him out. He's for me, he's still a work in progress emotionally. I'm trying to figure it out, because at times he can seem completely okay. For example,
go for it.
My dad lives in France, and there have been times when there've been, you know, good long periods of time between seeing each other, particularly pandemics and stuff like that. But also, you know, at times there's just been things that have occurred, and we haven't maybe seen each other for a year, and I remember turning up at Toulouse Airport, visiting my dad a couple of years ago. I hadn't seen him for ages. They got off the plane and he was there. And he just walked up and shook my hand.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love that.
Hello. And my dad's Irish. He's like, "Hello, Zoe, you're right." And I'm like, shouldn't we be hugging at this point?
Yeah, that's
great. Dad. But it was sort of he didn't quite know what to do, so he shook my hand.
That's so funny.
But then at the same time, my dad can be very emotional and very empathetic and get very moved by things. So, yeah, like I said, I haven't quite figured him out yet.
Well, like, does he get emotional about, like, things that... like sports. I don't know, like, you know that weird way that guys do, where you get more emotional about stuff that's supposed to be, that kind of is less important than his daughter's love.
Well, if you started talking to my dad about rugby, particularly Ireland and particularly Munster, you'd never get off the fact that would be it. That is it. That's his.
Yeah,
and tennis. He loves tennis, and he always says to me, "Zoe, do you watch tennis?" And I go, "No, Dad. We have discussed this many times. I love the tennis." And then he'll go on for about 30 to 40 minutes about the tennis.
Him and my mum should honestly, like, I think my mum loves Andy Murray more than me, is what I've realised. She has it when Wimbledon's on. She seems to have a TV in every room. It's very weird. It's like a kind of, it's the one thing from like
a sports
MTV.
Bar.
It's a sports bar. That's what I was thinking of.
Like a Cheers sports bar.
Sports bar where every available tennis match is on during Wimbledon. So she'll have like she's almost got every court covered in her house somehow. That's hilarious.
Like a headquarters of tennis.
Good. I guess it's good. It's good to have a thing you care about. But
it is good
funny.
To have a thing you care about. I think it's very good, Chris, to have a thing you care about. But I think there's also that human element when you realise that the person you've been speaking to for the last 40 minutes about the thing that you care about doesn't care about the thing that you care about quite as much as you care about the thing you care about.
I get that.
You know what? Yeah. So
I get that. I live in Los Angeles where essentially people talk at me about stuff I don't give a shit about and I just nod politely.
Is it mostly about themselves?
Yeah, it's mainly themselves. People love themselves here as much as your dad loves Munster rugby.
Okay, that's exhausting.
Yeah,
that's exhausting.
It can be tiring. But sorry, I've diverted that somewhat. But your dad, so he's a sweet guy, but he just has trouble with the. Are you an only child? Do you have brothers?
No, I have a younger brother.
Does he find it easier to connect with the younger brother? Is he one of those sort of guys?
No. My younger brother still finds my dad a complete mystery as well. Like we're both on the same page with this. Yeah, we're both on the same page. I suppose as I've got older, I've had to sort of observe myself and then be kinder and more understanding of his behaviours, because sometimes they are a bit odd. He's a little bit eccentric, my dad. He's the man who had a picnic in Death Valley with teacups and saucers on a blanket.
Oh, that's funny.
You know,
when I hear stuff like that, I go like, that sounds like my dad, where he's like, he lives his life like it's sort of, he's in a movie. Does that make sense?
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Where it's like, he's not like a jokey, I'm being funny. He just exists and it's amusing.
Yeah. My dad is sort of surprised about the world around him occasionally. We were talking about the Grand National the other day. We were talking because it was on, and my dad's Irish, and he lived very close to the Bromhead family who own a lot of the Grand National winners these days, or have run a lot of the winners. Yeah. So he was talking about the Grand National, and he just said to me, "Zoe, you know when they finish the race and the jockey is absolutely out of breath? Why is that? They haven't done any of the running."
I love that. That's hilarious.
And I had to explain that clinging onto the back of a hugely muscular beast for 4 miles over fences was a tad exhausting.
That's hilarious.
He didn't get it. He's a very, very, very clever man, my dad, but he's very academically clever.
But he doesn't get...
Yeah,
he thinks it's like sitting on a chair on a treadmill or something.
Yeah.
It's like... that's.
Which would beg the question, then couldn't anybody just sit on that chair that's jumping over? Yeah.
You just get the smallest living thing and put it on a horse is what you would do.
Jockeys.
Why aren't babies just riding horses? Yeah. I mean, I don't like the cruelty to horses as a vegan, but I would like to see a baby on a horse. Babies on horses.
So things like that, it's like, wow, have you... Okay, I'm always amazed at what amazes him, and then I'm like, so much stuff must amaze you on a daily basis.
But growing up with that is it's always hard to pinpoint exactly why we are doing what we do, but it sounds like, so your dad is kind of eccentric, you said. Is your mum a bit more straight and narrow? Are you kind of thinking, your dad's... behavior kind of made you embrace the being odd in a way, not odd, being counterculture, whatever, like, you know what,
yeah,
I mean,
he's a bit odd, and I do enjoy it. I enjoy watching. I think now that I'm older and I'm not reliant on him being my guardian, it's yes. better.
It makes I relate to that.
My father's also the man that made my brother and I lie across the bonnet of a car going up a mountain in the Alps at the age of, well, he must have been 10 and 8, because he was slipping dangerously in the snow, and to give the front wheels more traction.
Amazing. So you yeah. lay across the front, like
front of a bonnet of a car going up the Alps, a road in the Alps, French Alps, at night in a snowstorm. Didn't occur to him that that could be dangerous. So I've quite enjoyed that aspect of my dad. My mum is a bit more straightforward. My dad is very literal and very, I'm going to say slightly along a spectrum, in the kindest possible way, you know. Mm-hmm. And my mum is much more straightforward and to the point, and gets my humour immediately. Like, okay, my dad has never seen me perform live.
He's never?
No.
Wow.
It would be pointless. It would be entirely pointless.
He just wouldn't what is funny about it. What does he find funny?
Anything I said, he'd go, why did you say that? That didn't happen. did you really mean that when you said that? You're like, Dad, no, well, this is what you... So what does my dad find funny? I tell you what, we had a joint sense of humour when I was about 8. So that's where our sense of humour collided.
Your dad stayed at 8.
Yeah, he stayed at eight. Yeah.
Amazing.
So I like things like the Pink Panther movies when I was growing up with Peter Sellers and that sort of thing. We could be able to watch that and both find them very funny. But I guess that's quite slapsticky and quite obvious. Yeah.
If you really, it's funny, like, obviously, like, I'm trying to be, are we just trying to make our parents love us? If you're really trying to do that, you would be doing more of a Mr. Bean act if you really wanted your dad to find you.
Yes.
You'd just be, like, tripping over, hitting yourself in the face with a rake on stage.
On stage with a turkey on my head, yes.
Dad, yeah. Love me. Oh, that's so funny. It's so funny. Dads are so fucking weird.
Aren't they weird? Yeah, they're weird.
But your mum comes and watches you a lot? And
mum watches me. Mum's got quite a sort of cynical eye. Now when it comes to comedy, if you know, she'll sort of dissect other comedians and she's got a filthy mouth on her, so that's what I like about my mum. Yeah, she's I can really make her laugh, like really make her laugh, like we sort of go to the edges with each other, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I love that. That's a great relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I can do it with either of my parents. I feel like I'm talking to two aliens when I'm... unless it's rude. My mum finds, like, anything to do with, like, bums, dicks. She's got, like... she's like Bottom, the TV show, but in human form. Which is great.
My mum swears like a trooper. Absolutely swears like a trooper.
Are your parents together still?
No, they divorced when I was about 10. So I suppose that allowed their differences to really, you know, like two sort of halves of a iceberg drifting apart in a warm sea. They really sort of became their own things. Yeah.
Interesting. And when you do you remember like that? Because this has come up a fair bit in here, like in this podcast, is like. One of the other guests was like, his parents got divorced, and he was like, "Oh yeah, no, that makes sense. That is good. My parents are still together, which is great. But for my whole childhood, I was convinced that they'd argue almost every day. So I would have been like, okay, fine, if they did but they haven't.
Yeah.
So just different relationships. But that like a big shock to you? Do you remember in 10?
No, it was. It was a big shock to me. Yeah, because I suppose I'm of that age as well. You know, I was 10 in 1981, so quite a while ago. And divorce was still reasonably novel in those days.
Yeah.
And I remember
now it's quite hack.
Now it's really hack. Everybody's done it at least once. And but I remember being 10 and sitting in class going, oh, I'm the kid of the divorced parents, aren't I? I remember being really, it was quite,
that sounds
sad.
When you put it like that, that does sound very sad.
Yeah, it wasn't particularly easy, because then my mum got together with my stepfather, who was Scottish, he's still alive, and he got transferred up to Glasgow with his job, so we ended up moving, and it was all that period of time.
That's
was
a shitload of
yeah, it was a shitload of stuff
on a 10-year-old, especially.
Yeah, yeah. So that was, not particularly great. It wasn't sort of a smooth, amicable. No, it was amicable. Well, I say amicable. I don't know whether it was amicable. They were. It was in the days as well before dads had to sort of contribute towards kids properly financially, and I think my dad sort of struggled with the concept that because we weren't living with him, we still needed shoes and stuff.
Oh wow! Yeah. That's interesting that became a law for that reason. That isn't it? Some dads were just like, I legally have to do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, it's still eating, is it? Oh, right. Okay. I mean, I don't think it was done out of any malice. I think it's just genuinely.
Just not knowing.
Nah. Yeah.
The unawareness of a dad is knows no bounds, I've realised.
Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was thinking about that the other day. Like, I remember when I got married and I never heard this phrase before. Everyone kept going, happy wife, happy life, right? Which is like all these older guys. And then you go, only men need a rhyme to remind themselves. to be nice to the person they've agreed to love forever. They're like, I don't think women don't need happy hubs keeps you in love. They're just I'm nice, so I'm going to be nice to this person. It's, anyway, just maybe men are just, it's just the unawareness.
It's like beer before wine, fine. Wine
before. That's fucking hell. Yeah. So that
I wonder
must
what
be
one with kids with. I've got kids. got to feed a child. Keep it mild. Feed the child. Yeah.
Stop them going wild. Feed the child.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. So that's a lot though to go through. Do you remember do you even think I remember, and it wasn't necessarily intentionally because my parents, but I do remember. When I was about 10 or 11 or 12, I discovered being funny is a thing that makes people like you. So I don't know if that in any way relates or that feels tied into that moment in your life. Or...
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, it was about, it's about 10, isn't it? When you start having, I think you just occupy enough space at the age of 10, sort of just physically, it's just that bit bigger that the parents can't ignore you. So you can sort of, you can almost command attention in a room. So, about 10 years old, you can. But I was never a class clown. People always assume I was a sort of joker in the class. I wasn't. And I think that's a misconception of comics. I think most comics aren't the class clown.
Yeah,
they're the ones
sitting
in the corner looking at the class clown.
Yeah. I'd occasionally be cheeky, but I wasn't like a lunatic just doing anything for a laugh. I think you're right. Observing is the thing. You're just noticing the quirks of everyone else.
Yeah.
It's just quite tiring actually. It's annoying.
Yeah.
So you found that then, and then here's the thing that I that comes up a lot is your dad, he sounds like eccentric, but I do think that all comedians who are successful, and you are a successful comedian, and actually most entertainers or people in the arts, writers, whatever, there's talent and the fearlessness to do this job that is off the mainstream, but also a lot of hard work. It takes a lot of hard work to get to a level. So do you feel that from your mum? What did she have something job wise that made you, whether she said anything or you just saw her working every day and you were like, but I guess kind of
actually,
raising you on her own.
Both my parents are grafters.
Oh, cool.
Both my parents really do work hard and have worked hard. I did ask my dad recently how he ever managed to turn up on time to work, and he said he didn't really. But with getting older, I've noticed my behaviours and his behaviours, and I'm sure my dad has got a bit. I'm convinced he's a bit ADHD.
I've got the same. Honestly have the same. Me and my sister are like, dad's got ADHD. He cannot. But it's weird because then what are you going to send a 68-year-old guy to go get diagnosed?
Yeah.
But he doesn't. He also doesn't even. But I'm like, it must be. You know, he must do. Because I think I have it a bit, but then
I mean, I look at my father and I go, I have a diluted version of that, because it's just incredible. The level of faff, the level of distraction, the timekeeping is just, I mean, it's so stressful.
Your dad is my dad. This is crazy.
It's so stressful.
We have a phrase for it, JMT, John Martin time, because he's never. It's like an addiction, though. Or it's like he'll be legitimately an hour and a half later than when he says. And I get anxiety if I'm, well, I have this. This is, I don't want to do some common women and men things. I'm saying it, men, you know, dads do it. But if Hannah makes, I am late because of her, it makes me so uncomfortable. I want to like almost text the person with, it's not me.
Yeah,
I'm just I'm guilty by association, but it's not me. Anyway, sorry.
And that's
I need to get off my chin.
That is the same with me and my dad, and I'm like, just drives me mental, just absolutely crazy. And I'll phone him and I'll say, it'd be like 10 o'clock and he's only just getting up in the morning. And I'm like, what? Why are you getting up so late? And he went, well, I didn't get to bed until 3:30 last night. I'm like, why, Dad? What were you doing? He went, well, I started Googling characters from The Muppets from 1972. And you're like, oh, my God.
I love it.
Oh, my God.
That old excuse.
Yeah, and then he'll just go down a wormhole of, you know, whatever, and just get so distracted. And I've learned I have to write down all of his passwords and take photographs of them and then store them in my phone, because otherwise everything just gets lost. And, yeah, so he... yeah, he's definitely got that sort of a trait. But having said that, a very good work ethic, as my mother does as well. My mum works really hard, really hard. Yeah.
And what do they do for jobs when you were growing up?
My dad was a chemical engineer and worked for initially a pharmaceutical company in Ireland, and then came over to the UK and worked in oil. So he worked.
Wow, your dad did big pharma and oil.
Big pharma and oil.
he's like public enemy number one in 2022 from the left. Cancel your dad.
I mean, it depends which way you look at it, doesn't it?
Do you know what, though? It's funny how, like, our generation, well, you know, young, we can kind of judge. People just, no one, they just needed to earn a living back in the day.
I
met a woman on a flight who said her husband worked as an oil lobbyist in America, and now he works as a cannabis lobbyist. And I was like, that's hilarious how, like, we're all like over, like,
wow,
because that's the most right and left thing to be doing. Yeah. He's just like, well, I'm just trying to earn money for my family. Whereas I think now we're trying to be a bit more conscientious with stuff. But I try not to judge people of a certain generation for working hard.
I mean, you know, it would have been when my dad started in that, it would have been the 70s, and then, you know, into the 80s, big oil boom in Aberdeen.
Did he do a stint working for tobacco?
He didn't do that. No. But yeah, Boyle. And moved up to Aberdeen. So that's where he worked doing that. There was always a lot of I'm not entirely sure what my dad did.
Yeah.
I think back in the day you could just get away. Pre-computers, when you think about it.
It's true.
You could just fuck about with some graphs.
They couldn't check. You just look busy.
Yeah, like, he always had those plastic, like, so there were plastic stencils of of bits of engineering that you could.
Just like anonymous engineering.
Yeah, engineering knobs and knockers that you'd sort of stencil on, and then you'd go, this pipe joins that pipe, and he always had those. It was so basic when you think about it. And in fact, the engineering and technology required to drill down beneath the North Sea and extract a fossil fuel is an immense amount of expertise and science. And they were sort of using protractors, which is...
And they probably had so many people doing a tiny bit of vague work that amongst them, they just had a computer probably could have done the 20 people's jobs. That's hilarious.
So I don't know how my dad.
But he was always out. Was he on the rigs for that? No,
he did occasionally go out to the rigs. Yeah, every so often. But he wasn't a permanent rig worker. But he'd go out every now and then, and it'd be quite fun. I remember phoning him from the landline from home when he was out on the rigs, and somebody'd be on the operator, you know, operating the call, and you'd have to speak to him and go, you know, hello, daddy, over.
Oh, that's cute. That's fun to do as a kid.
Hello, Zoe. Over.
Oh, that's so
really sweet. It was really sweet. Yeah.
And was he, when he's doing all that work, was he like, I've got to go, did he have any, what's it, my dad has a phrase, got to keep the show on the road. It's, but it's that stuck in my head the whole, so it's like, it's just like by osmosis. I'm like, I've got to keep the show on the road. Got to keep working. Not that he's ever going like work or die. Like he's just, did he have that kind of energy with what he was doing? Or did you just, he was always working and you kind of noticed that? Or?
He was just, I think my dad could have quite happily not, I don't think he enjoyed.
Right.
The commute, the, you know, the mechanics of that. I don't think, I suppose later in his life, when he moved down, we moved back from Scotland, they moved back down to Surrey, him and my stepmother. He'd have been commuting in from Guildford on a daily basis on the train into London. And I don't think that was his thing. The thing with my dad is he loves nature. He loves being outside. And I would imagine that would have been quite a tricky thing for him to counter. That's, you know, hours on a sodding train where the temperature is completely wrong, as opposed to being out and about running in a field, which I'm very much like as well.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing he's passed on to you as well.
It's a really good thing.
Apart from some minor ADHD.
Apart from some minor ADHD.
You're overwhelmed by all the trees. You're like, yeah,
I'm going to count all the trees. and then the leaves. I've definitely got that from my dad, which I'm very grateful for. He loves nature. He was always taking us out in. Always taking us out in nature.
No, yeah, I know. My dad's the same. My dad's a country boy. Yeah, he loved. I've been went camping with my dad and all that stuff. And
yeah,
he loves all that. It's I feel like, how old's your dad? Exactly the same generation.
No, he's like, he's older. He's older than your father. My dad will be 80 this year.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. My dad's about 12 years younger, but my dad though has the energy of a guy that is easily from a generation before him, if not many more. He has this old fat. I don't know. His parents were old, so I think he kind of got a different. I think that's a kind of interesting thing that can affect how your sensibilities depending on when your parents grew up versus everyone else. But that's great. So your dad's, he was always doing all that work. And your mum, what was she doing when you were younger? Because she's was she then having to support you and your brother because your dad wasn't contributing that much?
We pretty swiftly hooked up with my stepfather.
Right.
So there was a sort of, I don't know, you call him a bridging loan. I don't know what it's called.
It's a cute name, isn't it?
But my mum worked as well. My mum worked when I was a kid. She worked as a night nurse, an auxiliary night nurse in a cottage hospital in Epsom when we were living there. And she, you know, she worked, I think about it now, she worked her bloody tits off because she'd do night shifts and then come home and then get us ready for school and then take us to school and then go back home and sleep for like 3 hours and then, do everything that you need to do in the house, pick us up from school and then go back to work. So she really grafted my mum. Really did. And she's got a very strong work ethic. Yeah.
I was going to say, you can't help but notice that when you're a kid and you're like, mum's, you're like, fuck, she's coming straight from work and doing that. And what was your stepdad doing? Was he working as well?
He was a bank manager.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yay. A bowler hat wearing bank manager.
What a detail. I'm definitely going to a bank if the manager's wearing a bowler hat.
Those were the days, weren't they? Yeah. Yeah.
But I feel like mum stuff is so interesting because now you're a comic and you're doing your own night shifts and you can't help. And she's, you realise that there's kind of no excuse to not be like, your mum's grafting all the time. And so I think that when you start stand up and you're driving ages to a show for no money and it's like, I know it's, we love the job, so that's part of it. But I think it's amazing, even in this industry, there's people who are less successful or haven't done well because they just go, I can't be fucked to do that. And you're like, you have to do that bit.
Because
it's a privilege to love it as well. Like, because if you see people, my dad hated his job when he was a lawyer. He said, never be a lawyer. And he would just be like, but I saw that. It was like, if you get something you love, just, you've got to be excited.
Yeah.
Work
it. So your dad always hated being a lawyer?
Said to me every day of my life, never be a lawyer. Said that every day. Whatever you do, don't be a lawyer. Every single day. Every single day of my life.
And he never thought to change it?
When I finished school, actually, he had this hobby of selling old books and stuff, and now that's what he does as a job. It makes much less money, but he is much happier. And so, whenever I was like, I want to do stand up, basically when I left school and I was at university and I was doing English, but he was like, he was totally supportive. I think if I didn't make any money from it, then I guess there would be a thing. My mum, once I started making money from it, was a little bit more on board. Even though she's watched me and I still don't think she really finds anything I do funny. Or she'll never say it to my face either way. But my dad is very much excited that I do. He's excited to be part of the podcast as well. So he likes that. But so you had a job before you did stand up, or did you go straight into stand up?
I faffed about just like a fish out of water. I didn't really know what I was doing. So I finished school. I went to uni. Yeah. I did psychology. Yeah. I left that. I didn't know what I wanted to do. Moved back to Glasgow, where my family were at that point. Waitressed for a few years. I went travelling. Then came back from that. Then went to drama school. And then sort of waitressed again until I decided I wanted to do stand-up. So I had never had a proper job. Yeah. Like a proper...
Because nothing resonated with you.
It wasn't what you were meant to do. I could never, ever see myself doing a 9-to-5. I just didn't... In my mind, I didn't know how that looked. I didn't know how I could squeeze my shaped peg into that hole. I just didn't... I didn't get it.
No, I'm the same. I was just like...
And the thought of, what? Have mission statements. Do what? Do one.
Yeah, what? Yeah. And listen to, and care about a thing that some... get told off for not caring about a thing that no one cares about. I could never understand that personally.
No. And I think when I was younger as well, it was sort of... I'm not going to say there was less opportunity, but it was sort of... I don't know. It was... people seemed to know what they wanted to do when they left university. They were, and I just didn't. I was like, oh my God, I haven't a clue what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I always felt slightly envious, but also slightly sad of those people who were like, I want to do this, or I want to be a teacher. I never wanted to be a teacher because I hated school with every ounce of my being.
Did you get in trouble at school?
No, I got bullied and I hated it. I just hated it. So I think the problem
you've
was...
You've got the classic comedian's origin story
it's
then.
It's just like... it's all there, isn't it? It's so cliched. And I think probably I didn't know what I wanted to do, because up until that point I hadn't done anything that I really enjoyed doing, except for performing at university with the Amateur Dramatic Student Society. But even that was like, I knew I wasn't a brilliant actress, so I was like, well, how am I going to make this work? And it was only when I started to go and see stand-up that I went, I think I could maybe do that. Yeah.
That's great. And then when did you start doing stand-up? In the 90s?
No, I was really late to it. It took me from deciding that's what I wanted to do to actually doing it. I think I did my first gig in 2000.
It shows how good you are. You've been so good for so quickly and so long. So what I want to know then is when you decided to do it, when did you go professional then? Like a couple of years, 3 years later, 4 years later?
Depends what you describe as professional.
Well, being poor, but it being the main thing you do, I guess.
Within a year.
That's fucking great.
But I had because what happened was, so I did my first gig. I went, that's it. This is all I'm doing. I had a very strong image in my head of how I was going to get there. I just had this really strong image. I was like, I'm going to buy a little car. I'm going to have a water cup in a cup holder in a car. People always laugh at me and say this, but it's true. I genuinely had this. I went, I can see my little notebook on the passenger seat beside me, and I'm going to drive up and down the country doing my thing. And within a year, I made that happen.
Now, do you know what? I'm not going to give you shit for that, because I have been recently, this is extremely LA, I've been seeing a therapist and he's been talking about manifesting stuff. And the thing is, right, everyone thinks it's bullshit, but the weirdest little things I've started thinking about, and they've just this is very small stakes at the moment.
Yeah.
Texted someone, and then not someone who I've fallen out with. I was texted them, and it'd been 4 days, and I went, they should text me soon. And I went and checked my phone. They fucking text me. Yeah. But a lot of this stuff is like visualize. The thing that you're saying, as much as it can be bullshit, you have talent to go with it. But with that, if you picture yourself with all this stuff,
yeah,
you have the energy of someone who has the stuff, and then it kind of follows. It's not, yes, it's not do it instead of the work, but it's just interesting because I'm like really on board with it now,
it is quite interesting. It is quite, like I said, that was the strongest vision I had in my head.
You're
really
like an early, you're way before your time thinking of that in 2000s.
Can I also tell you? Okay,
there is that. That is
because, right, you probably can't see this, but I've got an arm in a sling.
Oh, no.
Because I've just come back from Altitude Comedy Festival in Austria.
Yeah.
Where I fractured and dislocated my shoulder. On the first day, Chris, on the first day.
Day one.
But you know what? Before I got there, I knew I was going to dislocate my shoulder.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. I said this to Cindy, my other half, after it. I went, don't say it. I said, I just knew. I didn't know how. I didn't know when, but I knew. I knew I was going to dislocate my shoulder. I knew it was. I was going to dislocate it, and I knew it would be my shoulder. And as I fell and I hit the ground, my brain went, here it is.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
You've got special powers, but you have to listen to those powers.
Do you know? So it works both ways. I shit you not. I knew.
And here's a question.
Yeah.
If you had a bad one of them before you're about to get on a flight, would you still get the flight?
Oh,
that's a tough one,
isn't it?
I mean, I had one. This is the closest I had that the other day. Oh. Was someone sent me a message going, "You're gonna die tomorrow," on like, you know, DMs, yeah, on like Instagram. Some random lady just was in my requests. Never look at your requests. She went, "You're gonna die tomorrow." And I was flying back to the UK. I've never been more scared on a flight. And then but then when I got to the next day and I lived, I said, just so you know, not only did I not die, I went on a transatlantic flight and didn't die. And then she went, oh, sorry, wrong Chris. I now need to know who that Chris was. I want to know who that Chris is badly.
That's hilarious. That's brilliant.
But with the premonition thing, that's powerful now. You've done the arm. You can't. It's hard to know what to do with it. I don't want to put you off flying, but I'm just saying
And I get it every now and again. See, the thing is, I think it's, although this was quite specific, I knew I would do my shoulder in. I didn't quite know where or how. Mind you, skiing would be an obvious thing, wouldn't it? Yeah. But I have had other things before. I've had other things before where like a phone rings and I know exactly who it is. Ooh. If I haven't spoken to them for years, and I know exactly why they're calling.
Let's see if I can segue this back to parents. Do either your parents have telepathic abilities?
My mum.
Oh, does she?
Yeah, my mum.
Yes, the segue wasn't nonsense.
There you go.
She has a similar thing where
she has a similar thing. So when I was in Austria after being taken off the mountain on my emergency skidoo, which was quite exciting, I thought, I better phone my mum. So I phoned my mum. I said, hello, mum. She went, you've broken your arm.
Oh, you? No, that's crazy. I knew you were going to say that. What?
Yeah. I went, not quite.
You said, and your mum are like witches. This is a bit like Good Ones, but still like that's crazy.
And she wasn't the least bit freaked out. That was the other thing. She was like, yeah, I just knew that was going to happen.
Come here, son.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, I'm Zoe Lyons, comedian, sometimes found on Radio 4, often being very, very cultural and highbrow. Please join us on Let's Talk About the Husband, a new podcast that shines a cultural light on all things reality TV. I'm joined by my very trashy friend, Stephen Bailey, who you may have seen on Celebrity Coach Trip or Celebs on the Farm.
And I've done Live at the Apollo.
Oh, he's also done Live at the Apollo, and he just bangs on about that forever. Stephen, what are they going to get on the show?
If you...
I didn't know that was going to happen.
I know, I didn't.
I'm going to prove that you can learn as much about culture from pop culture, and you can learn everything you need to know from Kim Kardashian, as well as, like, the Guggenheim Museum. Is that the name of the museum?
It is the name of the museum. Yeah. Well done. So join us on Let's Talk About the Husband.
Can I dig deeper then on this? So did your mum... Okay, this is not the same. So when... I guess you've... In my head, you've probably had two big things in your life, and tell me they maybe weren't big, but I'm straight, so I haven't done this, but you came out to your parents, I assume, at some point?
Yeah.
Was that... And then also, see, everyone is telling them you're going to be a professional comedian. It's not quite the same level, but you know what I mean? I'm just curious how your parents reacted, or whether your mum knew, or to both of those events.
No, that they weren't particularly cool about it.
Interesting.
My dad just seemed he was going out with my stepmom at that point, who did have a gay friend, so I think that really helped.
Right. Okay.
Otherwise, I think it'd have really floundered.
Interesting. I mean, you say that kind of like semi joke. That is interesting how they people of that generation just have no frame of context, so even just having that one person is probably massively helpful.
Yeah, I think he even mentioned it, like, well, I've met Morag's friend Gordon and he seems okay. I think that was his point. But then once, you know, after a few years, he was sort of on board with it and stuff. But my mum in that classic way just made it about her and went, I'll never have grandchildren.
Were you young when you came out?
I mean, I was 21.
Okay.
21, yeah. I'll never forget what my mother said when I told her.
Yeah.
She doesn't... Sometimes she's not the best orator.
Okay. She's blunt, is what... Yeah. Is that kind of, That's a mum trait, I would say.
So I told her I was gay, and she went, okay. Well, that's a little bit like being told your child has cancer.
Oh God. Oh no.
Yes.
Yes.
Which has always stuck with me.
Wow.
I
have you told that on stage?
I haven't, no.
I mean, that's like dark, but really quite funny.
Funny, it's quite funny. I think I know what she meant, but I was like, Oh, I wouldn't do a TED talk on that, Mum.
I wouldn't pop that one on Twitter in a hurry.
Don't release that one into the wild like a dove.
I just can't get.
I know. Yeah,
but it's funny. It's extra funny because, like, she didn't mean it in a... It's sort of in a... I don't know what she meant it in a...
It's sort of like it's
this
a blow.
Helping.
Yeah.
But it's
But I remember, my face must have just been like, okay.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, because as much as you only get to come out once to your parents, they only get once to sort of react to it as well.
That's very true. I'm sure if she could redo that, she would do that over somewhat.
She'd reword it.
She'd go, do you know what, Mum? Before you say...
I mean, a treatable cancer, Zoe. It's a treatable cancer. Something that we can cut out and sort of, you know, radiography off. But, you know, a cancer all the same.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Fuck. Mm.
That's okay. Wow. So I assume this is then telling your parents you're going to be a comedian is nothing in terms of gravitas compared to that. I know.
No,
probably like,
no.
Hearing your daughter's a comedian is like,
yeah.
It's like some form of Alzheimer's. Or no.
It's like a mild chronic bowel disease.
Yeah, it's like a horrible migraine.
Well, here's where my parents were completely different, because my mum was entirely encouraging and had no doubt that it would work. We go back to the little premonitions. We were on a bus together in London, and we got off the bus, and she'd come to visit me, and I was really struggling. I'd just left drama school, and I didn't know what I was doing, and you know, I was thinking, do I want to be an actress and all of this? And my mum got off the bus and she went, I don't know how I know this. I don't know how it's going to happen. You're not going to get there the way you think you're going to get there, but you're going to be absolutely fine. And I know it for sure. And it was, wow. I believed her.
That's great.
Yeah. My dad, on the other hand, when I told him I was going to be a comedian, said, don't you need to be good at that to do that?
Yes, Dad. I love that. He's like, you need to be falling over more on stage. You need to be doing more running into lampposts if you want to make a career at that.
Yeah.
That's it. I feel like the balance of the two is actually
quite
an interesting thing because I feel like in this industry, I find, maybe I'm wrong, you need this unbelievable belief in yourself, but you also need people to not believe in you.
Yeah.
So you can go like, I don't know if it's healthy, but you know, I'm going to show those fucking people. I don't think that's healthy. Maybe it is. Maybe it's useful. I don't know. I guess whatever helps you, but it's interesting
to
have those two kind of ends of the spectrum there.
You do need to have belief in yourself, but you also need to have, you know, take a check on yourself. So up to those two things are completely there within both of my parents, packaged up differently. What you don't want is to be overexposed to one of them. You do need, you need salt and sugary popcorn. That's what I've got out of my parents. I've got mixed popcorn. I've got salt on its own, too much, your head dries out. You end up like a piece of, you know, wind-dried tuna. Sugary, too much, you get sort of, you feel sick. Salt and sugar, perfect combo.
It's the right level. Is that the first time you've said that? That's quite,
yes, yeah. It does seem to make sense, though.
It's perfect. It's like a perfect, and it's the perfect example of what, because if you have the double overly like, so you can be anything you want, Zoe, and you're going to probably be a bit of an arsehole.
You are going to be an arse. And when things go badly and suddenly you're not the princess or prince that your parents have held you up to be, you don't have the skill set to deal with that failure. Whereas if one of them's going, why would you want to do that? Don't you have to be any good at doing that? Then you've always had that in the back of your mind anyway. So it armors you up probably.
Do you tell your dad then, even though he doesn't watch your stand-up and stuff, are you like, you've been on Mock the Week loads, have you done live at the Apollo? I don't know if you've done
that. Yeah,
so you go, I did. He must have heard of that. He probably doesn't even watch it.
Oh, yeah. I don't know whether he's watched live at the Apollo. I just don't ask him anymore, because having to explain every word that I said on stage and what I was referring to is just, there's nothing like, you'll know this if you've ever had to send off a script of your stand-up to somebody.
Oh, it's the worst for a TV thing. That's the worst.
It's just, it's like sucking a Hoover tube up the arse of funny and sucking all the joy out of it. And then you end up writing in the side of it, you know, this is funny, I've done it on stage, you know.
Yeah, I know.
I pull a face here and it works. and that's how I feel every time my dad watches my stand-up. I'm sort of trying to sort of explain it analytically to him.
Yeah, that's. I think that's safe. After a while, you're just like,
Let's not talk about this.
Just okay, fine. But does he like get excited if you tell him I've achieved it? He goes, oh, well done. Is he? Kind
oh
of,
yeah,
yeah.
I think with my dad, Radio 4 is his thing. So
there we go.
He's very pleased when I'm on that. Yeah,
dad famous. Yeah. I always talk about mum famous as a thing. I was talking to some other comedian about this. When are you mum famous? Because like, you know, you could be on like a great TV show that just like no, like even Hannah, my wife is actually, she was acted in this sitcom last year. My mum said, what did she say? A bit too wacky for me. Just like, it's not even wacky. Just, it's a a very good comedy. But it's just funny how certain things you're just like, all right, well, whatever. Like certain Radio 4, that's great. Your dad likes his Radio 4. Your mum, and do I mean, presumably, my dad still doesn't know what a podcast is, despite him sort of being on one.
My dad.
Do you tell him I've got a podcast? Is he?
If I try to explain what a podcast was to my father, I'd then have to explain how he accesses podcasts, and I'd be dead before we'd worked it all out. Yeah, it would be like cleaning the Hadron Collider with an earbud. It would just be such a big job.
I feel that pain. Right
so, my dad's still got an iPod. And refuses to get rid of it.
That's kind of cute. I mean, that's better than a Walkman.
But he just can't accept that technology has moved on without him. He's like electronic banking, he just won't do it. And I said, why not, Dad? And he went, in case they steal my money. And I went, how do you think anybody gets paid, Evan? Do you think everybody just gets a brown envelope on a Friday still? Is that what you think happens?
I wish, mate. Yeah. I wish. Here's a question. This is how often does your dad send you an email going, should I click on? And I'm, don't click the link. Do you have to do that? Don't click the link. You know.
Oh, no, he's actually pretty good at that. He's actually.
Oh, is he? My dad every day is like, should I click this link to get a million? No, don't click it. No.
No, he's all right at that. I think he's. I think we must have sat him down and had quite a big conversation early on in his foray into the internet. So he's actually not too bad at that. Yeah.
Well, that's good. Well, I'm glad though that he's the other thing I found out from my dad, even though he doesn't always say stuff to me, I hear him talk to other people about stuff I'm doing. So I don't know if that's the thing that you ever catch.
My dad does that as well. Yeah.
It'd be like, oh, my daughter's a comedian and she's on Live at the Apollo. So do you watch her? Don't really understand what's going on. But yeah. Okay. That's cute.
Yeah. But he will get detail wrong.
Oh, cool. Of course. He'll say she had a bit about.
Yeah, she's presenting Question Time. I think that's what she's doing.
Yeah, what did he call? I just had an album. My album in America was put on this radio station, and he went, he helped me do the intro. He went, enjoy the presentation. I'm like, what? It's not a presentation, Dad. It's an album. It's not even that difficult of a concept to grasp. Well, that's amazing. So I love the fact that your dad, even though he doesn't really know what's going on, is still proud of you. And he's still just, you've learnt the boundaries of the dad. Learning dad boundaries is important. Let's not make him watch it. No. Let's not go into details. Let's just let him do his thing. And then your mum, she do you tell her every time you get good news straight away?
Oh, yeah, probably.
And does she go, I knew it, just immediately.
Yeah,
you're like, Mum, I knew you'd be on Live at the Apollo.
I knew you'd get that. I knew you'd get it. I just knew you'd get it. No, Mum's really good and she gets really excited when I get stuff. So that's really lovely still. Yeah,
I
really
love it.
Nice.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. Before we wrap it up, couple of things. If your parents were to listen to this, even though your dad, you'd have to explain that's not. Maybe your mum might. Would you like to say anything to them? I always think it's a nice thing. Like,
my mum and dad. I think I'd like to say to them, well, thank you for combining your beautiful sugary sweet differences to to allow this sugary sweet snack to develop.
Oh, I love that. Look at this. It's like poetry. I've missed you in my life, Zoe. That's amazing. And before, what I also have got my dad to do is I get him to research my guests. But like I said to you, he knows you. He's watched you. But he has a question for you. So producer Paul is going to play John Martin's question to Zoe.
Oh, lovely. I can't wait.
Oh, Zoe. We've not met on the South Coast, but we live 19 miles apart. You live in Brighton, and we now live in Eastbourne. I'm just interested to know what you think the difference between Brighton and Eastbourne is, and does it have any particular bearing on your activity on stage in any way?
The way he phrased that made me laugh. Activity on stage. I was like, activity not doing like stage. Yoga or something.
Pole
like
dancing. We haven't seen me for a while. It's changed.
Yeah, that's
it's
true,
evolved.
Actually.
It's evolved. It's a lot
comedy.
Of bikinis these days. The pandemic made us all change. The difference in Brighton and Eastbourne, about £100,000 for a one-bedroom flat. That's the difference. my activities on stage. The cliched difference between Brighton and Eastbourne is that Brighton is a bit more youthful around the edges, and Eastbourne is where you go to perhaps
to die.
Don't say die. No, but okay. don't say die. Think about dying. But actually, I don't think that's true anymore. And I think the south coast of England is just a slither of fun now. So I'd have just as much fun. I'd have just as much activity on the stage in Eastbourne as I would on my stage in Brighton. I'd probably arrive on the stage in Eastbourne in a shopability scooter just to bang home that cliched joke.
And the show would probably start at 6 p.m. and be done by 7:30. Do you know so what? Everyone could be in bed.
I'd be very happy with that.
I'd love that, mate. I'd love that as well. I did a gig the other day for some reason on a Sunday that was at 5:30, and I was like, all comedy should be at this time, done by 7. Yes, please.
It's actually, over here, a lot of gigs have gone that little bit earlier since pandemic. So the comedy store, The Late Show, is now at 11, not midnight or 1 o'clock as it used to be. And, Ball and Bananas, they've gone a bit earlier. So it's like,
bring it forward, guys.
Coincided with my retirement years. And it's
it's great. Getting lovely. That early night. I love it as well. And then the final thing, having heard John Martin ask a question, because I'm still trying to get him to sort of say, I love you. Have you got any advice that might help him just say the phrase, I love you? I know he loves me, but it'd be good if he could just shatter that kind of anxiety ceiling and just say, I love you.
I said, what are you scared of? Chris's dad. Yeah. What are you scared of, John? Let it go. Let it go. Tap into your inner dad. Tell your son you love him. Yeah.
I love
him. Yeah. He's in LA, mate. One day he's going to be running LA and you'll really love him then.
That's actually a good way of tempting him. Just some sort of financial gain.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay.
Look at
that's
this.
Actually. Money's
yeah, it's the golden ticket, mate. It's your golden ticket.
You want to drive a golf cart around a retirement home in Florida one day?
Yeah.
Say, I love you. I don't know. I think that's what rich old people do here. That's awesome. Zoe, thanks so much. Before we go, anything you want to plug? I know you've got a podcast with our fans. We share the same fantastic producer
yes.
Paul. But if there's any, plug that or plug anything you want.
Yeah, our podcast that I do with Stephen Bailey. He and I became close mates during the pandemic. So we now have a podcast.
I love that man.
He is one
of the most instantly affable, lovely humans.
He's very, very funny and he really, really makes me laugh. So we decided to do a podcast together called Let's Talk About the Husband, which is sort of loosely based on his real love of reality TV and my real hate of it. But somehow we managed to waffle on for a good 50 minutes about it. And it's been a lot of fun so far.
I don't know if you do guests, but I have someone who's never liked reality TV, but I fucking love Below Deck, the TV show,
and
I could talk about that show for hours. So I became addicted to it in the pandemic.
Duly noted. That's
just
noted.
As in, like, I'm not. You might not have. You know, when you just have like something in you, you need to like get out.
Yeah. Below Deck? Which?
I've watched all of the Med ones, I think. And I've watched at least, I've watched maybe 6 seasons or series of the normal one. I haven't watched the sailing yacht one, but I'm kind of, I'm rationing. And also, because my mum, I've talked about on here before, my mum was ill and she's actually doing quite well with her treatment now, which is great. She's, but I was in America and I was stuck in America.
Yeah.
So, and I couldn't watch anything sad.
Sad.
The only thing, I literally just would watch like, a series of it was all I could watch.
Brilliant.
I became like obsessed with that show. So
right, I will delve. I will dive into that. And
but anyway,
and,
yeah,
and
yeah.
We'll be in
bring
touch.
It up with bring it up yeah. with Bailey. But
we'll
I
bring you all aboard. Brilliant.
But everyone else, whether I'm on it or not, go check it out because two of the funniest, loveliest people in the business doing a podcast. I'm going to be checking it out. Zoe, thanks so much.
Absolute pleasure. It's so lovely to talk to you. It's been too long, my friend.
A podcast from producerpaul.co.uk.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time.
That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.